Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and it's the 5th of April 2012 in Sydney, Australia. Welcome, everyone. It's great to be doing this show. It's great to have you aboard, whether you're in the US or whether you're in Australia. I've got a huge amount of material to get through today. There's a lot of interesting breaking news happening in Australia that's kind of important stuff and stuff that we, that is central to our mission here at Truth News. So I'll be getting into that shortly. I'll be getting Josh Jackson on the show for an hour in the second hour to go over. I actually want to go over some of the key critical factors that we've been looking at in terms of personal empowerment and what we can actually do to lift ourselves out of the feeling that that we're just enmeshed in a grinding totalitarian kind of grid that we can only comment on and observe and that we can't actually have any power over. This is a feeling that a lot of people have as they look at the unfolding events that have sort of taken over the last few years, with the loss of freedoms and the increasing deceptions and manipulations of the media, and the feeling that people have that they can't actually control their lives, even though they do have a grasp of what's really going on. But I actually want to address some of that, and I want to critique it, because I think it's actually part of the problem is a psychological state that we get into where we think that that's the case, whereas in fact it may not be the case. That it may be that we actually have a lot more ability to control things and a lot more power than we allow ourselves to believe. But I want to get into some Australian news right at the moment. And I'll just lead with something that's actually in the news today. And it's another indicator of the degree to which the level of corruption and the level of lack of transparency in our government in Australia has reached. And this is the affair over the embattled MP Craig Thompson, who is now in a position where he's been found to be guilty of a number of breaches of the Fair Work Code. And it's quite serious breaches. And this includes things like using his credit card through the organisation that he works for, the Health Services Union, to get the services of prostitutes and a bunch of other things that are just straight out, you know, criminal corrupt behaviour. Now, the reason why this is so important is that Craig Thompson, being a sitting MP, if he were forced to resign, then the government would have to hold a by-election on his seat. And if the government held a by-election on his seat, they would lose government because they would lose power because the government is massively unpopular in this country. There was the most incredible landslide defeat that the government faced already in Queensland last week, and that's just an indicator of the mood in the country. But unfortunately, we've got this situation where the Gillard government is protecting this MP because he is the last sort of bulwark against total collapse of the government in Australia. And, you know, typically, historically, when a minister or a person in government is found to be engaging in improper activity, it doesn't even have to be criminal, the government of the day and the prime minister takes the lead and sacks that person, because that's the right thing to do. You know, you've been found to be behaving improperly, you're going to now have to resign, and they ask for their resignation. But instead of that, we have the government with their cronies in these organisations like Fair Work Australia collaborating to prevent the natural justice that would ensue from the investigation that was conducted on Craig Thompson. And I have a article here from that story. Now, this is actually a story from yesterday. The opposition was demanding the release of the Fair Work Australia report, and the coalition was calling for Mr. Thompson to sit on the crossbench if he is charged with a criminal offence. Now, just today, the Department of Public Prosecutions has actually responded to the brief that they received from Fair Work Australia. And this is where it gets quite ridiculous, because what's actually happened is that DPP has ended up saying that they have no ability to pursue a prosecution on this topic, because basically they haven't been given the information by Fair Work Australia. An article here from Murdoch Press, Perth Now. DPP admits investigation into Labor MP Craig Thompson's spending was derailed. The investigation into allegations embattled federal leader Craig Thompson misused health services union funds was derailed last night. The Commonwealth Department of Public Prosecutions said it had no power to investigate whether Mr. Thompson had committed a crime. Now, the reason why they're saying this is that the brief that was supplied to them by Fair Work Australia did not contain anything that could actually be taken to court. There were no sworn statements. There was no evidence presented. There were no affidavits. So it was merely a bureaucratic report that had no legal weight. But this was yesterday presented to the media as the brief that was going to the DPP. But this is all clearly part of a stalling tactic and an attempt by the government to just gain time, because the main thing the government is trying to do at the moment is to prevent an early election. And this is where we get into the really, really important overarching geopolitical aspects of this. The government passed the most unpopular legislation in our history, which is the carbon tax, last year. The carbon tax is opposed by at least 80% of the population in many polls that have been conducted. The Queensland election demonstrates and really drives home the fact that the government's policies are absolutely, you know, against what the people want. If government loses power, the tax will be repealed. Now, the tax, the carbon tax itself, is a far more than something that's just an Australian policy that's framed and is relevant to our country and our future. This is a globalist policy. This is something that is being instituted around the world in many countries, and as we saw raised in Parliament last year, 10% of that carbon tax is going to a UN fund. Now, that was actually raised in Parliament. The carbon tax is a major issue of loss of sovereignty for Australia. It imposes and further extends restrictions on the free market and what people have always understood as their basic freedoms in the name of this idea of saving the planet. And we really do have to understand and really have to face up to the fact that we are being deceived here on a colossal level, and that the people behind it and the purpose behind this deception cannot be for the good. They use the phrases for the greater good. They use the phrases that it is to save the planet and that we'll have to sacrifice. But this is the type of language which has always been used again and again in history to justify power grabs, to justify totalitarian power shifts, whether they be fascist or communist, which actually end up being pretty much the same thing once they get further down the track. It ends up becoming a way to create larger and more centralized and more tyrannical power structures. So the carbon tax is, I believe, what this is all about. And I believe the ridiculous games that the government is playing right now with the Australian people actually have a lot to do with the carbon tax. So we'll just keep that one under observation for the time being. But I do believe that this is something which needs to be continually monitored. Now, I just want to move on to another story, which is a story about the an ongoing information about the taser death in Sydney that occurred a few weeks ago in Sydney. And we have some protests that have occurred both in Brazil and in Sydney in relation to that. So I'll just see if I can get those up. Just having a little bit of trouble finding that information here. Unfortunately, I have a lot of tabs open on my screen, and I seem to have lost that one. The Guardian, I'll just read you a recent story from, it's actually the Communist Party of Australia. I didn't realise I was reading from the Communist Party of Australia. No indication of our affiliations here. I'm just reading an article that popped up here in Google. Taser death toll mounts. The death of Brazilian student Roberto Laudisio Curti has thrown the spotlight back on police use of tasers. The victim was allegedly fleeing the scene of a crime, and the crime was the theft of a packet of biscuits. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a man was tasered to death for the alleged crime of stealing a packet of biscuits. So that is something we will look into shortly. Now, I think we're just about to go to break. I'm just going to check. Sorry, I'm just having a little trouble here with my equipment. No, we're not going to break just yet. So I'll just move further into that story about the taser deaths. We've had some protests here in Sydney, and we've had protests in Brazil. Friends and family of the Brazilian man who died after being tasered by police in Sydney last month have staged a protest on the steps of the Australian consulate in Sao Paulo, Brazil, demanding justice for 21-year-old Roberto Laudisio. Protesters placed hundreds of packets of biscuits outside the consulate to symbolise the trivial crime Laudisio was accused of committing in the hours before his death. Up to six New South Wales police officers chased Laudisio, who was accused of stealing a packet of biscuits through Sydney's CBD. Laudisio had been in Australia on a student visa studying English and living with his older sister and brother-in-law in Sydney's east. Now, the key thing to understand here about why this is an outrage against human rights is that the ancient 1,000-year-old common law principle that you do not have to stop and talk to police is being completely overridden by the police behaviour in shooting a man who's simply not wanting to talk to them. And this was actually upheld recently in a Supreme Court decision in Victoria. And I'll come back to that after the break. But the Supreme Court has upheld that a suspect who the police may wish to question does not have to respond to the police. And that is now clearly set as a precedent in our law. You're with Truth News Australia. We're just going to a break now, and we'll be right back with some more news after these messages. You're back with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. I am going through some Australian news, which is of great importance to people's rights, people's freedoms, things that we consider to be essential on this show, and things that I think that everyone around the world understands are the essence of a truly civilized society and a truly free society. And that's pretty much what we focus on here at Truth News Radio. And believe me, there is so much to talk about because there are so many violations of that. I do believe that over time, you know, many things in our society have improved. You know, there have been periods of great increase in the dignity of humanity. And I'm all for that. You know, I'm certainly not saying that, you know, we're just in a terrible state of decline. But we have gone into a decline, particularly since, that cutoff point really seems to have been September 11, 2001. Although you can see a lot more going on before that, and you don't really have to, you know, use that date. But from that date, it became very clear where the trends were headed. And so shows like this have popped up, and we're basically beaming it out. We're keeping the focus on what is really going on. But of course, that's only part of the task. The rest of the task is your task and everyone's task to make a difference in society. And that's something that I will be talking about more in the second hour of this show. I want to just play a little clip here from an article that I mentioned before the break there about a Supreme Court ruling that a person is entitled to do a runner if not under arrest. Now, this is an article that was published actually late last year. If the police ask to have a quiet word with you, it is okay to do a runner. Justice Stephen Kay said that a man who bolted when police wanted to speak to him about an unpaid restaurant bill was entitled to make himself scarce, leaving the officers trailing him in his wake. So here's the actual report from Channel 7 News.
A landmark court ruling has given criminals the green light to run away from police. Last week, a Melbourne magistrate court ruled that a man who left a Mexican restaurant, allegedly without paying, was not resisting police, given that he ran for nearly 500 metres before he was eventually arrested at Flinders Street Station. So what happened on the night when you asked Mr Hamilton to pay the bill?
Oh, they just walked off and they tried to run away. And I have to chase them to outside.
Did you call police?
We did, yes.
Did you see what happened once the police arrived?
Yes, they ran away, and then the police... we finally catch them.
Today, the Herald Sun spoke to the man responsible for the ruling, Thomas Bevan. Mr. Bevan said the ruling clearly states that people do not have to stop and talk to police.
You don't talk to the police if you don't want to. Mm. And you don't have to remain with the police unless you've been arrested. Mm.
And there's no charges possible if you run away from them.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you can run away as long as you haven't been arrested.
Yeah. Do you think police would be surprised or unhappy with this kind of judgment?
Yeah, look, probably it might make their job a bit more difficult in some cases, so I guess they might be a bit unhappy, but, you know, obviously we have certain sort of rights, and it can be very inconvenient if something is to be held by the police on fairly flimsy grounds, so that's why we require that someone be arrested if they can be held by the police.
I understand this is an Australian first.
Look, the first case that I managed to find, well, it's the first case that I know of in Australia, there's similar sort of cases in England.
The manager of the Taco Bell restaurant received a cheque in the mail for the outstanding amount just a week later. The man who was initially charged with not paying for the account, Andrew Hamilton, claims it was a case of mistaken identity.
How do you feel about the guy who was eventually caught by police? He had charges of resisting police dropped.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. Now, it turns out that the man who was accused of actually not paying his bill was not the man. They actually had completely got the wrong person, and that was later vindicated in further investigations. So, you know, and that just further highlights why, you know, this common law right that you don't actually have to respond to a police, you know, questioning you is so important. Because, see, the police have strictures that they have to follow. They have a whole lot of things that they've got to do and paperwork that they've got to fill out if they actually are going to, say, arrest you. And it's more convenient for the police to be able to just interrogate whoever they want without going through those formalities. But that then can lead to situations where completely innocent people are being terrorised, which would probably have been the case in this case, where a man simply didn't... He did pay his bill. They got the wrong man, you know. The guy ran out of the restaurant and said, that's the guy, and it turned out it wasn't. Now, in a civil society, in a society that observes these basic principles that really go back to the Magna Carta, you don't just... arrest and interrogate people without charge. You have to go through those procedures, and those procedures protect the innocent individual, and they also lead to a system that's accountable. Because the worst crime of all is the crime that the state commits against an innocent person. And that is, many lawmakers have said this in the past, that is what we must avoid at all costs. Even if it means letting an innocent person go free, it is more important to make sure that the state never, ever convicts and punishes, especially with harsh punishment, especially with capital punishment, an innocent person. Now, of course, capital punishment, well, you'll say, well, we don't have the death penalty in Australia. But wait a minute. Roberto Ladizio is dead. He was killed by a taser in the back because he didn't stop to talk to police. And I've looked at the information on that topic, and I've looked at the YouTubes, and you've got a lot of these sort of knee-jerk law and order people saying, serves him right, you shouldn't run away from police. And of course, that's the way a lot of people think. But that mentality is not... it's just not compatible with a free and democratic society. It's not compatible with a society in which the individual has rights and dignity. But the situation is compounded by the use of these, what they call less than lethal weapons, that are quite often lethal, that are an extreme assault on the body. I mean, a massive electric shock that goes through your body. And there is another case from the US quite recently, which I actually have on Truth News. I put up a whole collection of these stories. There is one that is a particularly harrowing story. It's similar to this one. The girl concerned is not dead, but she's in a vegetative state, and she will never be able to be normal again. She will be a vegetable for the rest of her life. And she was, again, tasered in the back by a policeman over a traffic infringement. And what happened with her is that when the taser actually goes into your body, it causes this muscle spasm, which your entire body goes rigid. And then you can actually see it in the video because it was captured by the police dash cam video. I believe it actually happened in Texas. And the girl just falls like a tree trunk on the concrete tarmac. She's just basically slammed onto the ground, and her head, you can just see her head sort of bouncing off the concrete, and that was it. Her brain was gone from that moment. So why is it happening? How do we understand it? How do we analyze it? We can see on the one hand that Taser International is making a lot of money out of selling these guns, okay? It's a worldwide industry, and they're making a lot of profit from it. And, of course, it is a monopoly. There is no other company that I know of that's actually selling Taser weapons. So it's a very tightly controlled monopoly run by Taser International, and they've tied up deals with governments in countries around the world and are making a lot of money out of it. Now, the other connection here is with the governments. The governments and these corporations working together, and one must assume that there is also some mutual benefit to people within the government. Now, this is one of those issues of corruption again that, I mean, you have to consider that this is a highly likely scenario when you have this type of level of corporatist collaboration between government and big business. We don't have the information, but I would pretty well guarantee you it's there. Anyway, we're just going to break again now, and we'll be back with more news right after this break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
I will not go down under the ground, because somebody tells me that death's coming round. And I will not carry myself down to die. When I go to my grave, my head will be high. Let me die in my footsteps before I go down under the ground. There's been rumors of war and wars that have been. The meaning of life has been lost in the wind. And some people...
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. It's great to have you aboard the show today. We are going through some news in relation to Australian affairs that are pretty important. And in the next section here, I want to talk about the Schapelle Corby story. Now, for those who aren't familiar with Schapelle Corby, if you're listening overseas, Schapelle Corby is an Australian citizen who was arrested in Bali in October 2004. She was on her way just for a holiday with her friends and family. And when she went through the customs at Bali's Denpasar Airport, she was found to be carrying 4.2 kilograms of marijuana, which was stuffed into a boogie board bag. Now, Schapelle protested her innocence right from the start. Her entire attitude towards it was that this is nothing to do with me. She did not interfere with the customs when they were trying to do the search. She was absolutely shocked when they unzipped the bag and saw what was in there. She asked for fingerprints to be taken of the bag to potentially exonerate her. Of course, they didn't take those fingerprints. She asked for CCTV footage to be presented to the prosecutors in Bali to indicate that her bag, you know, was not stuffed with this massive amount of marijuana, which would have been quite obvious from the security camera footage. She was not granted that footage. They didn't supply it either from Sydney Airport or Brisbane, where she originated, or from Denpasar. She begged them to do forensic testing of the origin of the marijuana that was found on her. They refused to do that. There was never any proof that she had connections with drug syndicates, either in Australia or in Indonesia. There were no other prosecutions in relation to this. It was just Schapelle. The people she was traveling with were never even the subject of an investigation. She was just basically took the rap, and because she continued to protest her innocence, she got the maximum sentence. She got the harshest sentence possible, which was 20 years in Bali's Kerobokan prison, which is an absolute, you know, nightmare. It would be very hard to even survive that. The living conditions there are very, very tough. It's very overcrowded, and there's a lot of violence, and there's also a lot of drug dealing in there as well, ironically. Now, over the years, there's been so much information and disinformation coming out about the Schapelle story. But what I really want to focus on today is that what I believe, and many of us now believe, is the reason why Schapelle has been basically denied justice, is that this is a cover-up of the extremely corrupt practices that were known to be going on at major airports around Australia, particularly at Sydney's Kingsford Smith Airport. Now, there were a number of investigations that had been ongoing from early, I think, in 2002, which had shown that baggage handlers and customs officers were actually part of an international drug syndicate, and that these people were facilitating the trafficking of marijuana and heroin and various other drugs through the airports, using passengers' baggage as the transportation mechanism. And this was actually being done from, you know, overseas into Australia, and it was also being done domestically. So if you wanted to get a bag of marijuana from Brisbane to Sydney, you know, you'd just get your mates in the baggage handling department to pick it up, and then they would insert it in someone's bag at Brisbane, and then someone at the other end would pull it out, and it was all a smoothly oiled machine, and people would be paid off. And this is how it worked. And most of the time, no one knew the difference. The passengers had no idea it was going on. But, you know, there is always a risk that if you're going to use a passenger as a drug mule unknowingly, that that may have repercussions. Now, this is actually not just my opinion. There are some top customs people that have been interviewed on this subject, and you can find all that at a website called expendable.tv. That's the Expendable Report on Chappelle Corby, and they've done a tremendous amount of work in uncovering this type of information. And the customs were aware that it was going on, that the non-corrupt people in the department. And when Chappelle was arrested, they had conversations amongst themselves that this was actually probably a case where one of these, drug syndicates had screwed up, essentially, and forgotten to take the drugs out of the bag. And so it went on to Bali. Now, what's really indicative of the level of corruption at the highest levels in our government is that while initially there was support for Chappelle and there was a massive grassroots campaign to free her because it was pretty apparent that she was innocent, the government started to backpedal on it. You know, they gave her initial support, then they started backing off. And around about 3 months after she was arrested, there started to be more of these reports surfacing about the corrupt baggage handlers and police involvement in that, like that there were actually corrupt police involvement as well. Now, At that time, the head of the Australian Federal Police, which I believe was Mick Keelty at that time, said that, I believe he might have been the police commissioner at that time. I'm not sure what his exact role was, but he was a very obviously highly ranking figure. And he made a very damaging statement to Chappelle's case, because Chappelle was claiming that this must have been put in there by someone at the airport, because obviously she didn't put it in there, and that's what she insists. She did not put it in there. She checked her bag in. It was in there when she arrived, so someone at the airport must have done it. But Mick Keelty, the senior ranking police commissioner, said on a live interview on television that there was little evidence to suggest that this type of thing was going on, little evidence to suggest that there were these type of corrupt practices, little evidence to suggest that baggage handlers, customs, and other corrupt members of the government were facilitating drug transportation. But even as he said those words, there were other police coming forward to say the exact opposite, that he knew full well was the case. And there was the Alan Kessing report, which is the main report from the Customs Department itself, which he also would have known about, which details their investigation, which was a 3-year investigation into the corrupt practices of baggage handlers at Sydney Airport. The statements that were made by government at that time destroyed Chappelle's case, because Chappelle's case was based on this claim that someone else had put it in there. The government refused to give it any support. The Indonesians said, well, if that's the way it is, you know, and the Indonesians work, obviously, the diplomatic channels are very important to the government over there. And the position of our government was very important in influencing the position of the prosecutors in Bali. So she was found guilty on the prima facie evidence that the drugs were found in her bag. But there is nothing to connect her with those drugs. There is no forensic. There is no background connection. There is no photographic or other evidence that shows she was carrying that bag full of that material. Unfortunately, she received the harshest sentence, and her appeal was also quashed, and she's now suffering severe mental trauma, mental illness. She's been on heavy antipsychotic and antidepressant medication for a number of years. And we're just getting up now to the news that we have had yesterday that Chappelle Corby is closer to release, as a new report recommends clemency. Now, this was in the major newspapers yesterday, and it was also on the news and on the radio. However, there are some interesting points to make about it, which I will get into. But first of all, here is the story from yesterday. Convicted drug smuggler Chappelle Corby is a step closer to winning her freedom after Indonesia's Justice Ministry confirmed it had recommended she be granted clemency and an early release. The development comes 2 years after Corby first launched her bid for clemency. Corby, 34, is suffering from mental illness and struggling to cope with life inside Bali's notorious Karabukan jail. While details of the recommendations from the Justice and Human Rights Ministry have only just emerged, a senior official confirmed the final report was handed down to Indonesian President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono some months ago. And that's the key words there, some months ago. Actually, about 6 months ago. And this is actually not new news. But there is some new news that surfaced just yesterday on the Expendable report, which I'll be getting into straight after the break. It's really important stuff. We'll be back shortly. Hi, welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Harold Fenton. Welcome back to the show. Today I'm going through some of the unfolding issues in the Chappelle Corby case. And I want now to turn to some information which was just published on the Expendable Project at expendable.tv. Now, this is very complex and very dense information, and I'm going to struggle to get through this because it refers to many different characters, many different threads, and many different themes. But there are two names you need to hold in your mind because these two names are of critical importance. One of them is William Miller. William Miller was a man with a police record connected to the drug trade who came forward and did an interview with the Daily Telegraph at some time in 2005. And unfortunately, I don't have the dates here. I wish I did. Actually, I've got one date here. July 27, 2005, I believe, is the date he came forward. And this became a big headline in Australian news. The Daily Telegraph headline was, "Corby's drugs were mine." And I'll just read to you here from that story. Actually, it's very hard to read this because I'm looking at an actual scan of a printed page and not a textual block. I'm actually looking at just a graphic, and it's actually impossible for me to read it. In a series of lengthy interviews over 2 days this week, Miller said he wanted to save Corby from a life in jail, but he demanded... I'm sorry, I'm actually reading the wrong part of this story. This is actually quite a long story, and I've actually just scrolled it to the wrong point. Just to give you a background here, the story was put into the Daily Telegraph. The headline of the story was, "Corby's drugs were mine." The second half of the story was then more or less a hit piece on the man who gave the interview, saying that he was demanding money for the story. And that in itself is another story, ladies and gentlemen, because it's the story of the Daily Telegraph character assassinating the man who actually came forward to give the story in the first place. I'll just read to you here from the summary provided at the Expendable Report. On the face of it, the story was potentially helpful to Chappelle Corby. The Daily Telegraph presented Mr. Miller as an important figure in the case, in its front page exclusive, yet towards the end, it almost dismissed its own story. Unfortunately, I'm not able to give you that information because it's actually not here on the page in front of me. I'll just try and summarize it for you. The man who came forward had said that he was involved in a drug operation and that he was actually asked to go and pick up some drugs from Sydney Airport on the same dates that Chappelle Corby was flying out of Sydney to Denpasar Airport. Now, he actually says he declined the job, but he came forward with this information because the dates matched and he had a background in this type of operation, and he was convinced that these drugs that he was meant to be picking up were actually Chappelle Corby's, the ones that ended up in Chappelle Corby's bag. Now, the next character you need to bear in mind in this story is Chris Laycock. Now, there is a whole lot of information on Chris Laycock in the news, in the media. You can put it into Google. He is a corrupt police officer who was found to have engaged in standover tactics, extortion, and had connections with drug dealers. Now, it turns out that Chris Laycock had direct connections with the man in this story who says Corby's drugs were mine. And this is why it is so important. But the reason why I'm telling you this now, and the reason why this was not known years ago, because this is all from 2005, is because it was completely suppressed. Because the information that would have provided that to the general public was brought up in a closed hearing at the Sydney Crime Commission. And the Sydney Crime Commission was obviously a watchdog that was set up to oversee and to look into matters of corruption within the police. And I'm just actually scrolling through here an incredibly dense document that's actually a PDF file that's on Google Docs that has all of this. But this is why it's actually very difficult for me to present this information to you, because I'm actually trying to, I've got a document that's hundreds of thousands of words long, and it's got different segments in it that have very pertinent bits of information, and it would take me probably 3 hours to go through the whole lot. So I'm just going to actually read to you here the key point, which I think is the killer point in this whole issue. And this is from the confidential minutes of the Gaimia team meeting of the Crime Commission, which have now been leaked to the Expendable Project. In July and August of 2005, Gaimia investigators released LD material, and I'm going to explain all the abbreviations after. Investigators released LD material possibly related to the Corby drug trial prosecution. The information from a recorded conversation between Gaimia POI John Dunks and William Moss, is a pseudonym for William Miller. Sorry, this is complex. William Moss equals William Miller. Indicated that Moss was awaiting a shipment of cannabis from Queensland that was to be smuggled through Sydney Airport about October 2004 when the Corby cannabis seizure occurred. Moss alleged to press during the Corby investigation that he was the intended recipient of the Corby cannabis. The LD conversation supported this assertion. This matter has been followed up with Warren Gray from the AFP. Now let's just break down that paragraph for you. In July 2005, Gaimia investigators released LD material possibly relevant to the Corby Bali drug prosecution. LD means listening device, meaning that this material was procured via the bugging of a suspect location, which is understood to be Dunk's home. The information arising from a recorded conversation between Gaimia POI, person of interest, John Dunks, and William Moss indicated that Moss was awaiting a shipment of cannabis from Queensland that was to be smuggled through Sydney Airport. Dunks is the very person who William Miller cited as offering the airport collection job. He is also positioned by the Cobalt Report to be an important key member of the Laycock Hopes gang. The recording indicated that William Miller was awaiting a shipment of marijuana, suggesting that the shipment was yet to occur. In other words, it suggests that the recording was made prior to the event itself. The Cobalt Report also confirms that Dunks was a person of interest prior to the 8th of October 2004, when the public hearing commenced. And this was, ironically and incredibly, this was the very same date on which Chappelle Corby flew to Bali. A New South Wales Crime Commission hearing to which William Moss was called also confirmed the contents of the recording. This was a private conversation between William Miller and the person he stated had given him the airport job, in which they discuss that very collection. Now, as I mentioned earlier, William Miller's story was discredited. It was even discredited in the story that presented it in the Daily Telegraph. As I mentioned there, they made a big deal that he demanded money for it. And on the ABC Media Watch, they completely trashed him. And the Media Watch program has been and continues to be used as a tool of government propaganda. It is not a media watchdog. It is merely a tool to manipulate what people think. And the Media Watch program did a terrific job of destroying the credibility of this man, William Miller, who we now know from this secret confidential leaked information was genuinely involved in this operation, and everything he says is corroborated, right? It all matches up. This would have been a gold mine for Chappelle Corby's defense. This would have got her off, ladies and gentlemen. This would have had Chappelle released. There's no doubt about it. And we've got to add that to all the other information that we already knew, right, which is the ongoing corruption in the airports. And let me just go through some of the other things that I haven't mentioned in this show. There was another operation which was called Operation Mocha, which the Australian Federal Police were involved in, that was tracking a drug syndicate that was bringing drugs from Argentina. Or was it Peru? It was definitely from somewhere in South America. Now, they were overseeing this operation. They were monitoring it, okay? And drugs were being brought in, cocaine in this case, was being brought in through from South America. And the day in which the main transport of those drugs came through Sydney Airport was the very same day, the 8th of October, that Chappelle flew to Bali. The very same day when this public hearing was commenced, the very same day that we had all of this information coinciding in the police about what was going on with this very pervasive network of drug couriers connected to airport people, connected to corrupt customs officers. We have senior government members denying it after the event in 2005. We have Mick Kilty completely denying it, but we have evidence from within the police that they were monitoring it, they were aware of it, they even had recordings of people talking about it. It's a travesty of justice for Chappelle Corby, of course, and she's paid an unbelievable price for this cover-up. She has actually facilitated the cover-up of these corrupt officials and facilitated that the general public remains unaware of complete breaches of law that were ongoing and one must presume are continuing in the system since they haven't been fully exposed. Now, of course, Chappelle's plea for clemency may come through, but that appears to be a cover story. That appears to be a smokescreen and a distraction from this really, really bombshell evidence. So please go to expendable.tv, check it out. We're just going to break now. It's great to have your company. I'll be back after the break. Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back to Hour 2. My name is Herewood Fenton. It's great to have your company. I've been going through a really intense information-packed show in the first hour, and I've kind of exhausted myself. I was actually hoping to have a guest on who could have gone through all that Chappelle Corby material probably better than I did, but I do hope that if you were listening to that, that you got some value out of that, and I do hope that you get to expendable.tv to investigate it further. It does take a bit of work to get through this stuff. Like, it's not simple. It's not just like presented in easy sort of information bites for you to grab. And I actually do want to try and do that so people can understand it a bit more easily instead of having to spend hours and hours reading and understanding all the names and following all the links. But look, the Chappelle Corby story is a very important one. It's very important to everyone who you know, cares about injustice and, governments turning their back on citizens, governments, covering up crimes and using citizens as essentially unwitting patsies in that exercise, which is what we've seen again and again in recent times. But in hour two of the show, I would like to welcome Josh to the show. Josh Jackson, our great Truth News second co-host. And welcome back to Truth News. Josh, are you there?
Herewood, how are you, sir?
Mate, I am. I'm a bit exhausted, but I'm really in great shape. Like, I'm just ready to. I'm exhausted, but I've got plenty of reserves. If you know what I mean. Like, I'm just getting into my second wind.
Well, funnily that you should say that, because today we wanted to have a little chat about motivation.
Yeah, exactly. And, we do indeed.
Because I think a lot of people feel very overwhelmed by the information that they gather, and they want to do something about it. They want to challenge the power structure, and they want to help. And I think a lot of people feel overwhelmed, and they just can't. They just feel paralyzed by it.
I agree, and I feel that way too. You know, I feel sometimes it's just too hard, even to gather the information that I'm trying to do to present this show. Because even that becomes an insurmountable task sometimes. And I'll tell you a few other challenges I have. Like, I'm trying to, run a website, so manage a website, maintain it, upgrade it, do all of the kind of programming technical issues, which are really techie, and you get your head into that space. You can't think about anything else. Then I'm trying to, get into the audio recording area to make that work. Again, something I had no knowledge of and no experience with before doing the show. Then on top of all that, I'm trying to sit down here in a relaxed way and be a news presenter.
Plus,
how can anyone do that? It's ridiculous.
Grab your head around all of history plus the geopolitical landscape of today, and just plus how money works, and just on and on.
Oh, yes, we have to explain all that too. You have to, the internal dynamics of how money works, the whole history of civilization. We have to just take all that.
Just do it. What's important, if we've had some demos, some demonstrations and things against war and stuff, and sometimes people get out to those things, but if we don't end up organizing them, we've found that a lot of people just don't have the motivation to get out there and do it instead of the small core of people that have got the motivation to do it. So we wanted to walk through some steps to people to take to make a difference and to sort of feel like they can do something in their life that they feel important. Now, step one, I think, is have a clear goal, because a lot of people have all this information and they want to fight the whole new world order powers, elite structure, and they really can't, they just think, oh, look, what's the use? I can't get any, nothing's going to make difference. And you told me the other day that, Harold, that you get, messages sometimes from feedback from people saying, oh, you're not going to make a damn little bit of difference because and all this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, get many of those, yes. Well, I get a lot of feedback generally.
This is the sort of thing that happens, is that people really feel like, oh, we can't make any difference. So I think the first thing to do is make a clear goal of what you do want to tackle. Choose your battle. And if your battle is, helping the local homeless people, or doing something nice for your neighbor, or just pick a goal, because you don't have to conquer the whole world and make everything good. You just have to do the one thing that you can feel like you can achieve.
Yeah, and that goal needs to be thought through. You need to, you know, that needs to be based on your skills, your passion, you know, what absolutely. You want to do, a whole lot of things. But yeah, please continue.
The next step, I think, is ignore the unimportant. And this is you know, sure, we all need to switch off and sometimes and watch a, you know, American Idol or Australian Idol and just or whatever and just be brain numbed. But try not to do it very often, because the unimportant can crawl in and take over your motivation. It can make you focus on stuff that's just not important.
And if I can just add an addendum to that, these distractions and this unimportant stuff is brimming with psychological propaganda that's highly refined. Remember, they spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on everything that goes on to TV. The amount of money they spend is staggering. Now, they hire psychologists. They hire a whole range of people to work out how to even just script an ad, because an ad has to be that, you know, effective to work on your brain. So if you're watching commercial television and turning the volume down isn't going to stop it, because the visual imagery in those ads is also full of things that are psychologically designed to trigger your brain in various ways.
Oh, and, absolutely. I worked in advertising for a very long time, doing special effects. And, you know, the agencies that would come in, they'd really refine every little pixel and tell me to change certain sort of colors and all sorts of things to really, you know, I mean, a lot of the time, it's just some young punk that really doesn't have a clue, to be honest. But some of these big commercials, they spent, you know, it's a lot of money that's going on air, so they got to get it right.
Absolutely. Okay, so what's next on your list?
The next step, I think, for motivation is to find inspiration. You know, read success stories. Read books of Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and other activists, or just anyone. You know, you might really like Richard Branson and get, you know, some inspiration from his business skill to build whatever you want. Because a lot of these businesses, and you know, even if you read some of the Rockefellers and all these things, because they have succeeded in their way. Yeah, it might not be the way that's to you or whatever, but reading success stories makes you feel like a bit more empowered, because they're only human at the end of the day. Yeah, some people have you know, a lot of power and stuff that was handed down to them, granted all that, but at the end, some people haven't. So, you know, if you find people that are very inspirational to you, definitely read their books, watch their movies, try to you know, suck some of that inspiration into you.
Yeah, and look, there's some really important points I want to make about that, but it's going to take me a little while to get through it. But I just want to just briefly point out that empowering your mental state by doing that is essential. You have to be in a state where you become mentally, emotionally, psychologically empowered.
Yeah.
And you, as you quite rightly say, Josh, by reading the stories of other people who've struggled in the past, other people who've done difficult and great things in the past, you can then align yourself with a mental projection that this is actually doable.
Yeah.
But I want to get a bit more into that after, but please continue with your points.
So the next one is talk to people about it and get excited, because I find that when you have it all to yourself, it's very hard to get excited. And getting excited is what you were just alluding to there, is really gaining the inspiration and the will to say, yeah, I can do this. You know, I am excited about this project. I'm going to get up there and I'm going to do it. And by talking to other people, it allows you to, so talk to your wife, talking to your husband, talking to your friends, talk to other people that are in a similar mindset that you can bounce ideas off of and get into it.
And that applies to everything. It's not just we're talking about political activism. Whatever you want, if you want to start a business, if you want to change your life, you want to get out of a career rut, whatever you want to be doing, it applies. This is about personal motivation and personal development across the board, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it really is. The next step, I would say, is say no to distractions and trolls and avoid energy vampires. You know, you get them all the time where you have these people that just suck the life out of you. I mean, all they do is talk about themselves, or they tell you that you're crap, or there's all sorts of people that really, you know, the energy vampire. It's kind of an interesting concept when you start thinking about it. You look around the people in your life and you think, yeah, I do know a few of those.
Yeah, and they're often people who have some kind of problem or personality disorder, or, you know, they're people who've got issues that they haven't resolved. And some of those issues are intrinsic to the nature of our society at present. There's a lot of people like that, you know, and you really do have to watch out, because they're like landmines, you know.
Absolutely. You've got naysayers, you've got pessimists, braggers. They all suck life from you, you know, it's important not to get caught up in these sort of power games because of these sort of people, and just to ignore them, get them out of your life.
Yeah, and you know, you've got to basically use the time you have. You've got a limited amount of time every day to get something done. So you have to use that time, and you've got to work progressively towards your goals. And I often have this problem too, Josh, is that I have these great goals that I want to achieve, but I forget that, you know, in order to get there, I've got to do a little bit every day. And then I spend all this time thinking about it. And then I think, gee, I still haven't done that. And it seems harder than ever because I haven't made those progress steps.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that is actually one of the steps. One of the points that I wrote out as well is that, you know, even if you can do 5 minutes of your goal a day, if you can do 5 minutes a day, you are bound to get your goal done.
Yeah, and you can even fit that in with a full-time job, you know. You can be working in a full-time job, which is obviously very time-consuming, but that spare time that you have has to be invested.
Yeah, and the next step is squash negative thoughts, replace them with positive ones.
We're just about to go to break.
Yep.
So let's pick that up after the break. You're with Truth News Australia. We'll be right back.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Back with Truth News Radio Australia. Today I am running through some motivational ideas with my good friend Josh Jackson. Josh, you were just going through some points there, really excellent points there, and I think a lot of people are going to get some value out of that. Can you just pick up, I forget exactly where you were at there.
Well, we were just talking about squashing negative thoughts and replacing them with positive ones, because you know, we all have, throughout childhood, we might have had friends or we might have had family members that put you down straight away if you have an idea or you want to go do something. And those sort of things build in your neural net path in your brain. And you can't help it but repeat these words that were told to you as a child or even throughout adolescence. And so it's really important to recognize self-talk. Recognize when you're telling yourself negative things, like I can't do this, or I can't possibly take in all this information, or I can't possibly do anything about it, and just write them down. Oh, hey, look, I just told myself I couldn't. Just step outside of yourself and sort of recognize the self-talk of negativity, because once you recognize it, you can then do something about it. Instead of treating it as a truth, you treat it as, hey, well, that's just negative talk. So I think that's a very important little number to take heed of.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, posting your goal, I think this is an important step as well. Posting it and committing publicly to your goal is a really good way of getting motivated, because then you know nothing motivates like telling other people you're going to do something and having them push you and we can't wait to see that. You know, once you've committed publicly, you feel a little bit more pressure to actually get it happening.
So it's like making a pledge.
Yeah, making a pledge. I mean, you know, a friend of mine, he had a little column in a newspaper in a little country town. And so he was going to run this marathon, and he said, all right, I'm going to do the marathon. And of course, the whole town knew about it, so he couldn't say no anymore. So he ended up, you know, doing it. So committing publicly is a really good idea. Now, spend time outside. This is imperative, because I know so many activists or hacktivists. They sit there behind their computer thinking they're making a difference, and they do it, you know, that's all they ever do. They just write comments and go around, which, you know, goes a fair distance, spreading information online. But I think being visible outside is quite important, don't you think?
Oh, Josh, it is really important for your health, and it's psychologically is essential. I try to do it every day. I go on a lot of long walks, and I try to fit those into my schedule, so it's like part of my, like, when I'm going to work, I'm walking home sort of thing. But yeah, it's also getting out into the fresh air and you know, really also doing it in a reasonably natural environment also helps. I mean, you don't want to just be walking down a big, noisy, polluted street if you can possibly, you know, avoid it. But, you know, a nice long walk through a park or something like that.
Absolutely.
Great.
The negative ions and reionize yourself. But apart from that, also any sort of activism, try to do some activism outside. Try to engage people in the real world, because I find that if you spend too much time doing any sort of activism online, it really can alienate yourself as well, because people are so angry online. They can instantly bite back with their venom very quickly, because they're no one's seen face to face. And when you actually come up to someone face to face and say, hey, you know, have you thought about 9/11, or have you thought about this war with Iran? You know, what do you think about that? And engaging people on a face to face level, I think, is important.
Yes, you have to actually engage with new real people. And that also, it trains you and it tunes you to what the zeitgeist is. You know, the more you do that, the more you start to understand what's really going on. And yeah, I would certainly like to be doing it more myself.
Mm. Well, you got to choose your battles, you know, and you've chosen the websites and the radio show. So, you know, you're very visible outside, and it's wonderful to see.
Yeah, and of course, we would like to get more people engaging with us. And we do have, you know, a talk show now that you can call into. I still haven't got the Australian number running, but we do want to have dialogue with our listeners. And actually, in the last segment of this show, I'm going to be going through some of our feedback that we've had from some of our listeners. But sorry, have you got any more points there, Josh?
Or? Well, there's a few. Like, think about it daily. Think about your goal daily. Try not to let it go. Post it up on a wall, on a visible wall, maybe on your fridge, because you tend to go to the fridge at least twice a day. And so you can see your goal right there, and repeat it to yourself. Repeat it, you know, and say, you know, whatever the goal is, whether it's activism or it's just something that you're going to do, repeat it. Get support is also important. around you, and that goes back to my previous of talking to people in terms of your friends and family, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And start small, really small, because a lot of people take on these huge challenges. Yeah, the final goal can be huge, but start small, because otherwise you can feel overwhelmed, and that always puts a damper on things, and then you end up back in your hole. And you know, it's these sort of things that help. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty more. And where you know, if you've got a tip that motivates you, please post it on truthnews.com.au.
Yeah, send it in to us. We are very keen to get your feedback, and we'll post it up. You know, we'll put an article up with that information. Now, Josh, I just want to move on actually with another concept, which is sort of dovetails with what you've been talking about. I want to talk about the concept of a meme. Now, this is a word that's been used in anthropology and biological sciences. I've just read you the definition here from Wikipedia. A meme is an idea, behavior, or style that spreads from person to person within a culture. A meme acts as a unit for carrying cultural ideas, symbols, or practices, which can be transmitted from one mind to another through writing, speech, gestures, rituals, or other imitable phenomena. Supporters of the concept regard memes as cultural analogues to genes, in that they self-replicate, mutate, and respond to selective pressures. Well, without getting into that level of biological reductionism, I'd like to just to take this idea of the meme and apply it to what we're trying to do with those of us who are waking up to the realities of the system that we're living in, as opposed to simply believing that the world is on its face value what we grew up with. In thinking that, you know, you make money, you put the money in the bank, and then, you know, you get interest, and that, you know, the government is there to make sure everything works perfectly, and that they're going to take care of everything, and the policeman is there, you know, to protect you, and, you know, to stop the bank robbers. We all learnt that at school, right? You know, this is a type of a meme, right, that we have believed in all our lives. In this system, in this, it's a whole set of cultural factors. Sorry, did you want to say something?
Well, my other favourite meme is the conspiracy theorist.
Yes, well, I want to get onto that in a minute, but just you can respond to that. But what I want to say is this: is that yes, now there is a meme again that comes from all of that when we start to understand that we are not free, right? A lot of people are aware that we are not free. Like, a lot of people aren't, a lot of people are, right? But one of the viral thought processes that becomes quite predominant when people start to realize that we are not free is that this meme kicks in that you are powerless, right?
Yeah.
And this is the one that I really want to focus on, because we can change that meme. And by changing that meme, you can change the reality. Because remember, a meme is a viral process, a viral set of thoughts, ideas, and practices. So if you have the meme that you are powerless and you spread that meme, guess what happens? Everyone else feels powerless too. And if you sit around talking to all your friends saying, it's hopeless, you know, the Illuminati controls everything, it's a 10,000-year-old plan, they control us, they're going to bring in World War III, they're going to have a totalitarian world government, they're bringing in RFID chips, we're all going to be chipped, right? That is a type of a viral meme that then everyone spreads, and everyone, guess what, becomes totally disempowered as a result of absorbing that information.
Yeah, and that's not to say that information is false.
Correct, and let's get into why it may or not be false right after this break.
The man who stole the water will swim forevermore, but he'll never reach the land on that gold. That faint white light will haunt his heart till his only memory.
Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. Today, this afternoon, we're going through some discussion here about empowerment, what you can do, some points there that Josh has been running through, and we're discussing the concept of how we are sometimes trapped in a set of thoughts and set of limitations that could be called a type of meme that is actually viral, in the sense that you know, it can easily be transmitted from one person to the next, and thereby, you know, you can disempower others by having a disempowering meme, but you can also empower others. And you know, just started off then by talking about, you know, the conventional view of the world, and that is a type of meme, and we, you know, believe that that all's right and the government's running things and, you know, everyone's doing their job. Well, that's a meme, and that everyone reinforces each other with that meme, typically in society. Then I think a lot of times people wake up to some really shocking facts that they discover, whether by accident or whether they meet someone or whether it's in their family or whatever. You know, maybe they find out that the Kennedy assassination was not as it's been told. Maybe they looked into 9/11. Maybe they found out about the you know, climate change not being what they were told. You know, there's all this hidden information that was suppressed. And then they see, well, the government's not telling us things. And then what actually happens is the conspiratorial meme kicks in, and the conspiratorial meme can then really become quite overwhelming, and people can become totally locked into looking at giant conspiracies, and that they can feel that there's actually like a totally alternate reality to the one that most people believe, which is that the whole world is being run by these secret societies and that they've been controlling everything, and that they started all the wars. They started World War One. They started World War Two. They're going to start World War Three. That they've got this plan that they want to reduce the global population, and that that they're so powerful and they're so pervasive. And unfortunately, that meme is actually quite a powerful one. And if you get totally immersed into it, you will feel totally disempowered yourself, because you'll feel, my God, well, this conspiracy is so huge, how can I possibly have any effect on it? And I've had that from many people. I've had it from many listeners to this show. I've had it from many people I talk to. And often they say to me, you know, why do you even bother, you know, doing this? I've had many people say this to me, why do you even bother doing your show? Why do you bother talking about it? It's hopeless. We're all like just doomed. And I've had people suggest to me, the best thing to do is just to go underground, you know? Just, you know, try and escape, because we cannot stop the inevitable. Now, I believe that's complete rubbish. And I don't, you know, I have an understanding of why people have got into that state, but they really need to be disciplined about it, you know, in a friendly way. And if people do that to you, you need to, you know, set them down and say, look, you're stuck in a meme. You're stuck in a negativity meme about what you can actually achieve. And that is one of the biggest problems we face in the movement of people who are liberty oriented, in that they get sidetracked in this conspiratorial meme and then become paralyzed again.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
I totally agree. But you know, that's not to put down people that believe that, because, you know, there are a lot of very extremely powerful people that have run the world for a very long time, in terms of railroads and owning all the resources and buying and the banking structure and all this stuff. But they don't control you as a person down to every granular level. They might control you in terms of, well, there's only four choices of credit card and they own all of them. But there's alternatives.
Yes.
And there's alternatives like Bitcoin and all these things that we talk about. And so you can break out when you just don't get paralyzed by the fact that, oh, they control everything, because they don't. They can't. They're all of them, you know, it's where we've all got the same amount of chromosomes. We're human, and you can't just be shut down that easily. And I think generally a lot of these major conspiracies, they think they control everything, but the fact of the matter is, I think they're better just at taking advantage of things that roll out, that play out. So if there's...
Can I just suggest, Josh, that we can actually launch an alternative meme? Because basically if we launch a new meme that is, I have power, you know, I can change things. And if we make that meme viral, then suddenly millions of people can be thinking, I can change things and I can have power. Yeah. And there is no doubt about that. If that happened, we would change. I'm not saying it would be easy. There would probably be a very violent reaction, but we would change things. I guarantee it. We could get this government out of power very quickly if we did that. Because this government in Australia is only hanging on to power by a tiniest shred at the moment, right? And now, of course, I'm not saying the opposition is great either, but the point is the opposition has pledged to repeal the carbon tax, and that is very important. So if we were able to get the Australian Labor government out of power, we would have the carbon tax repealed. Now,
the thing is that I personally know that the opposition, the Liberal Party, for those Americans that are listening, is that they're just the same. They were talking about a carbon tax too when they were in power.
I agree with that. However, I just want to really make the point that is something to deal with further down the track. See, at the moment they're committed to repealing the carbon tax, and therefore we have to put this government out of power so that when this government, new government, comes in, they will do as they've said. And if they don't, then they get put out of power again. And this again, it's really important to understand this. The point here is about understanding that you do have the power. Yeah. And this is where I think it's a meme, I think, Josh. You know, we actually have to realize that we have the power.
I always talking about memes. Let's say you're out there discussing some of these big issues, and the conspiracy theorist meme is always used against me as well by other people by saying, "Ah, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Haha, funny little conspiracy theorist. Okay, let's shut down." And that the conversation over then.
Yes, well, see, that is the meme of the cultural conformity of the current system of people who are locked into it, defending itself almost like a biological organism defends itself against attack. Right? It must destroy an alternative meme. So your alternative meme comes in. They say conspiracy theory. You know, target it. You know, set, and the antibodies come in. Destroy. Right? Because. That the meme of the conformist society that we live in now cannot sustain the viewpoints of the globally aware and the liberty infused people who are actually now coming forward. It cannot sustain it. Therefore, they have to be cordoned off, attacked, and destroyed.
Yeah, and it comes back down to cognitive dissonance as well, where people have invested so much time into trust of the state and trust of the police and trust of everything else around them that they don't want to allow. Just like you said, it's almost like a self-preservation. Instead of saying, "Oh my God, I've been fooled all these years," they'd rather just say, "You're a conspiracy theorist," and shut you down.
Correct.
And this is it's a very valid point. And I think if And this was going back to the point that I was saying about getting rid of people that don't – not rid of people, but avoiding people that just tend to shut you down and suppress your viewpoint and there's nothing wrong with debate. See, this is a different thing. If someone's debating with you, that's healthy.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, "Oh, what about this and that?" It's not just "You're a conspiracy theorist, shut down." What you think? How does the banking structure? Well, the banking structure doesn't work like you're saying, and there's some debate there. That's healthy and it's fantastic.
Well, this is what I call empowerment. See, empowerment is about you reinforcing, and I mean this in a positive way, reinforcing your own self-worth and your own value and dignity, and reinforcing your meme that you are creating for your reality. Right, which is one based on universal values, right? I mean, this can be used negatively. This can be used in a very dark and evil way, but we have to use it in the right way because we have to empower ourselves, right? But the empowerment has to be based on the correct principles. So we start with the correct principles, but then we have to, as you say, don't allow in those sort of corrupting, poisoning thought processes, those viral thought processes of other people that will then lead you to lose confidence. And there are so many ways you can lose confidence. It's not just the direct attack. It's the people who say, well, you know, the New World Order is too powerful. You can't fight against it. See, that again, that is another way that you can be undermined. You really have to realize that the ways you can be undermined are very many and various, right? And that's why I'm using this concept of memes as a tool, a conceptual tool, so that we can actually apply it and say to ourselves, yes, I'm going to damn well create a meme. You know, I'm going to create a meme for myself. Yeah. And I'm going to protect it. And if there are people out there that I know are vampires, or, you know, energy vampires, or negative or narcissistic people who basically are going to just undermine my empowerment and the strength of my meme, I'm going to distance myself from them. And I'm going to make collaborations with people who are actually collaborative and empowering.
Yes. No. Excellent points.
Well, thank you so much. And I mean, you know, I think the combination of these practical steps, as you've pointed out, and understanding a conceptual framework and having some tools to work with can be really, really powerful. Coming back for the last segment, please stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Welcome back. You're with TNRA, that's Truth News Radio Australia. You can find us on the internet at www.truthnews.com.au. We've got a website, we've got a lot of podcasts on there, we've got a lot of articles, we've got a Facebook page, a fair amount of conversations going on there, and we love to have your feedback. And I'd like to actually in this section just read a bit of the feedback we had on the last show that I did, which was a highly controversial show, and I know it stirred up a lot of condemnation and a lot of acrimony from some of our listeners. And I have had about 10 unsubscribes since doing that show, which is always unfortunate. But, you know, look, I stand by the show. I think it was a good show. And I have also had some good feedback from a couple of listeners as well. Of course, questioning someone like Darwin and questioning Darwinian evolution really goes to the core of some of the closely held preconceptions that many people have about the way our system works, the way our science works, the things that we cherish. And I understand that it's hard. You know, it was hard for me too. I didn't jump into this lightly. But I found that Craig Isherwood's arguments were actually quite compelling. I actually spoke to him before on the radio about it on a radio show here in Sydney called Radio Skid Row. And I think he's got a really important argument, and it dovetails with some other indicators that we have about the way in which the concept of the survival of the fittest is being used as a nanny state measure to, as they call it, social Darwinism. And of course, this was the essence of eugenics, was social Darwinism, was the idea that, well, we can actually make evolution work. We can, in fact, make it work better. We can decide who we want. We can decide what are the best qualities. And
like, of course, an unnatural selection.
Yeah, well, it's like an unnatural selection indeed, Josh. And of course, many people have said, that was just the foibles of, you know, the eugenics movement and the Nazis, and they were bad people, but the science is right. But then you go into Craig's research and he's showing you, well, actually, Darwin's ideas were intrinsically connected to this oligarchical principle, and that they were intrinsically connected to ideas about scarcity, whereas, in fact, you know, scarcity meaning, you know, we're running out of stuff and we're really worried that there's going to be too many people, just like you might have a paddock full of too many rabbits, you know, and that's what Malthus used as his model, was this population growth thing and rabbits. And it's treating human beings just like rabbits, right? Now, Now, the creative principle, which is what Craig is actually looking at, is saying, well, human beings are not just like rabbits. You know, we have this creative ability. We can actually change our destiny. We can creatively solve problems. A mere population growth isn't going to cause a catastrophe like it would for rabbits, because we are not just controlled by instinct. We can actually think of creative solutions on how to feed those new people. And guess what? That is the essence of what has made human civilization possible. We never would have had 6 billion or more people on this planet if we'd not continually had these creative solutions. And that's what makes humanity humanity. So there is something intrinsically, and I really do think he's on the right track here, there is something intrinsically dehumanizing about this attempt to just say, well, human beings are just like rabbits, and it's all survival of the fittest, and we've got to then manage it because then you ask the question, who are we to make the decisions? Who, when they say we're going to manage it, are you speaking like as a rabbit saying that? Because if you're a rabbit, you don't manage anything, right? But and this is where the oligarchical principle comes in, because there are people who consider themselves to be above the level of the rabbits, right? And they're the ones that are going to make all the decisions. And they're going to decide, you know, whether we should have, you know, abortions, whether we should have afterbirth abortions, maybe, whether, you know, certain socially unproductive people should be sterilized, maybe, you know, people with certain syndromes shouldn't be allowed to be born. You go into the ideas of Peter Singer and some of these bioethicists who basically say that people who are socially unproductive are non-persons. He actually says that, Josh. I don't know if you're familiar with Peter Singer, but he actually has these absolutely chilling ideas that people who are socially unproductive are non-persons.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something here?
No, well, I always find it fascinating that a lot of these people, the professional students, all they do is sit there in these universities coming up with some of this sort of stuff I just find so horrid. And really, they're the unproductive. They're sitting there sucking off the hardworking, because the hardworking's paying for all this public university lecture. Absolutely. You know, and so... Yeah. Anyway.
Now, I'd just like to read a couple of comments here from some of our detractors. Now, Des Kahn, who has written on Facebook page, has said, Darwin was a product of his time, as we are of our time, and we likewise will be seen as politically incorrect by conspiracy theories of the future. That does nothing to invalidate the scientific basis of Darwin's argument for evolution and the origin of species and speciation. Darwin's skills as a naturalist and an observer enable him to construct and comprehensively illustrate a compelling argument for the operation of natural selection as a primary mechanism of biological evolution. The diligence with which he comprehensively documented his argument may well have been motivated, apart from awe and enthusiasm for his work as a scientist, to put to rest Bishop Usher's medieval theological nonsense of a literal seven-day creation 6,000 years ago and logical fallacy of William Paley's watchmaker argument. The fact that the competition to go to print before Wallace led to Darwin substantially abbreviating his works indicates that he did not invent the idea of evolution, but gave eloquent and fact-based expression to ideas already in wide circulation. Now, just skipping to the end here, it's quite a long post. If you got rid of the obsession with conspiracy, past and present, you could have a useful discussion of real history, real science, and the real future.
Now, oh, so there's the meme again.
Yeah, you know, Des, I mean, I'd like to say, Des, you've written some really interesting things here, and it's well written, and I respect what you've said. But yes, I agree, and I made it quite clear in our interview that we were not trying to endorse Bishop Usher's version of a literal 7-day creation 6,000 years ago. We were not on the show to endorse a biblical version of evolution. We were not denying evolution either, right? And we were not saying there was a giant conspiracy. We were simply saying that Charles Darwin was influenced and heavily, you know, controlled by certain people, and that those people used his ideas for an agenda. But as you say, Josh, there is the meme of the conspiracy that it's being foisted upon us.
Mm.
And so, but that's the meme coming from Des. See, that's Des's meme of how to perceive us.
Yeah, if you can drop the conspiracy stuff and just focus on real fact. The thing is what? There's never been a conspiracy in the history of the world. There's never been, I mean, a definition of conspiracy is two or more people getting together to conspire and to do something. You know, I mean, it happens all the time. Judges deal mainly with conspiracies.
Exactly. Now, I'd like to just read another comment here from the website. This is a positive comment. I enjoyed the conversation with, this is actually from John Scrivener, who's written on our site. I enjoyed the conversation with Craig Isherwood re Darwinian evolution. I've studied biology, ecology, and geography up to third year at Tasmanian University, including Darwin's theory on the origin of species by natural selection. It seems clear to me that Darwin's theory was very much influenced by the social and cultural perspectives of his time, which were likewise reflected in the writings of his contemporaries such as Malthus. It is also clear to me that evolution is not so much the product of competition between species over limited resources, but rather the opposite, the proliferation and diversification of life forms against a backdrop of abundance. I really love this beautiful wording here. The fossil record supports the idea that evolution proceeds in a rapid burst, interspersed with long periods of relative stasis, a concept known as punctuated equilibrium. The primary driver behind evolution, then, is not so much competition for limited resources, but rather the creative adaptation of life to an abundance of newly acquired habitat. And, you know, look, I like that in so many ways. I mean, I'm not saying he's right and they're wrong. I'm not actually trying to be a dogmatic in my viewpoint here. But I do like the positivity, and I like the sense from this perspective that we can see abundance is actually the guiding principle. That this is a different philosophical paradigm to the Malthusian survival of the fittest. You know,
scarcity
paradigm, and it's really a philosophical position. Which way do you want to go? Do you want to go with the scarcity fear paradigm, or do you want to go with the abundancy we can creatively solve problems paradigm? I mean, it's pretty obvious to me which way I want to go. Of course, you can find evidence to support either philosophy, but you've really got to decide here that this is a philosophy. Which philosophy do you want?
At the same time, you know, science, philosophy is a type of science, but you know, we're trying to get to the truth about how the origin of species came to be and how we all came to be, and so it's you know, it's not just which way do you want it to be. In one way, it's a way of looking at the perspective for sure, but in another way. It's important philosophically to also try to dig down to the truth of where we, which we'll never really truly know, because it's such a complex issue. It's not like the world is round, which we can scientifically prove it's there. It's one of these scientific facts because it's so measurable, whereas evolution is so complex.
And it takes so much time to, if you were to run an experiment, you'd have to run the experiment over about 1 billion years to actually watch what happens. We just can't do that, can we? We can't do it in a laboratory. We don't have 1 billion years up our sleeves.
Yeah, well, you can run computer simulations, but then rubbish in, rubbish out, right? But it's, you know, it depends on the programmer
and computer models have been shown.
I'm still a great subscriber to the Darwinian theory.
Josh, we're just about to run out of time.
Of natural selection.
Josh, we're running out of time. We've got to go.
All right.
The hour is up. See you next week.
Ciao.